First, they show that over a period of years, starting during the 2020 election cycle, the People's Republic of China carried out what is believed to be the largest compromise of election data in history, resulting in China's illicit acquisition of 220 million U.S. voter files. That information includes names, addresses, phone numbers, political party preferences, and other sensitive data that would be needed to register to vote and engage in other nefarious activities, which is exactly what was happening.
This is my video update on this Friday afternoon, July the 17th, coming to you from Nicosia, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news. And let's start things off with Trump's speech from yesterday evening, where he was talking about election integrity and election meddling. And the big allegation made towards China that they have been meddling in U.S. elections, and that this has been covered up by previous administrations, by the Biden administration, and that China was meddling in the 2020 U.S. elections because they did not want Trump to be elected, understanding that if Trump were to become president, he would drop the hammer on China. And so Trump, he talked about all of this yesterday evening from the White House, and he also announced an investigation and four reports from the White House, from the Department of Homeland Security, and the CIA. These reports are now available on the whitehouse.gov website. The first report talks about election vulnerability, and it makes the claim that the election system in the United States has a whole lot of holes and is very vulnerable to foreign actors, to foreign states getting access to election systems and meddling in U.S. elections. Trump called out, the reports call out Russia, North Korea, Iran, and China, the axis of evil. Now, these countries, not China, but the other three countries, it doesn't claim that they are meddling in U.S. elections or anything like that. But the first report basically claims that these countries could, because the election system is vulnerable, gain access to various data or to the election system. And if they wanted to, they could manipulate the U.S. election voting system. That's the first document. So it talks about the vulnerability, the vulnerable state of the U.S. Election system. Now China is being called out for meddling in the U.S. elections. And that's document number two. Document number two claims that China did indeed, that's the accusation, meddle in the U.S. elections to try and keep Trump out of office. And it further claims that the previous administration was covering this up. Tonight, POTUS is declassifying records about the Chinese Communist Party's multi-domain influence operation in 2020. The CCP used all elements of government power, trade, diplomacy, social media, open source reporting to undermine his re-election. President Trump called it the largest compromise of election data in history, resulting in China's acquisition of 200 million U.S. voter files. Note, CCP could use this data for multiple purposes, voter fraud, identity theft, and to target Americans for recruitment. President Trump said the Chinese influence operation was intentionally suppressed by elements of the U.S. intelligence community and withheld from him. Huge accusation from the U.S. president. It very much reminds me of 2015, 2016, that time period when Trump was going up against Hillary Clinton, and the Clinton campaign threw out the accusation that there was Russian election meddling to benefit Trump. The Russians wanted Trump in office. That was the accusation from the Clinton campaign, completely made up. And we know it was completely made up. Now we know it was all fabricated. Clinton and her campaign staff and Robbie Mook and all of these people, they came up with the whole Trump is a Putin puppet, Russia election meddling. But it stuck. And it gained traction and it gained momentum. And it's one of the reasons that we have the proxy war between the United States, the collective West, via Ukraine against Russia. Everything that happened in 2015-16 and these accusations of Russian election meddling did play an important part in taking us to where we are today with this this war in Ukraine. And this very much reminds me of all of that. But now we have Trump claiming that China was and is doing the big election meddling because they did not want him in office. Now I've seen some analysts claim that these records and this data, these 200 million U.S. citizens' data, some of it is public record. Some of it can be obtained from open sources. Some U.S. voter data can be purchased online, not illegal. Someone can come along and purchase it. Actually, many organizations, NGOs and campaign organizations actually do purchase this data. Depends on the state that you're in. But 200 million records, citizens' records, that's the claim from the Trump administration. I believe over 200 million, 228 million or something like that, that they claim China got a hold of, and they were trying to exploit this data to the detriment of President Trump and of the United States. So this is taking us to some sort of conflict between the United States and China. That's how I view this. This is like the opening shot that has been fired, the opening salvo for what will be over the next 3-4 years, a big time conflict, possibly a big time conflict between the United States and China. You have the election meddling from the Chinese. That is the allegation from the Trump administration. It's a very, very big and serious allegation from the Trump administration. I wonder how China will react to this. So the third document focuses on Michigan voting. That one sounds very legit. I have to say the third document to me is very legitimate. It claims that in Michigan you had what are they called? Canvassers? One second. I think that's the right word. Yeah, canvassers. We're going around and getting people to sign forms and submitting registrations for fictitious people. And everybody that they actually submitted, the number of people that they would submit would give them some sort of a gift card or something like that. So the more people that they could register or that they could submit to be registered, they would get some sort of an award or a gift card or something like that. And this was allegedly going on in Michigan. The more applications collected, the better your chance to receive some sort of a gift card. So that's the third document. And the fourth document is on non-citizen voter rolls. And it claims that, and this is from the Department of Homeland Security, that allegedly 278,000 non-citizens were registered to vote in federal elections. Not a big number, not a big number at all. But Trump did make the claim during his speech yesterday that the 270,000 number of non-citizens registered to vote is actually much higher. So it's more than 270,000. I believe he said it's 3x or 5x more than that. But the report focuses in on this 278,000 number. That's the fourth report. So that was the speech from Trump. Those are the allegations made towards China. And we await to see what happens next. Where is this taking us? It's interesting that the Trump administration, they're talking about election meddling, and they haven't really focused on the laptop, Hunter Biden laptop. They haven't focused on the suppression from big tech with regards to the Hunter Biden laptop or all the things that big tech was doing. The Twitter of old, banning Trump, removing Trump's social media presence. You had the banning of the New York Post. Remember that when they reported on the laptop? Facebook was really suppressing Trump big time. Nothing in that direction. It's focusing on China. This has a geopolitical dimension to it. So that is that. I don't think I have anything else to say. U.S. adversaries, including Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea, have the capability to compromise U.S. election infrastructure. They have the capability. That's document number one on election vulnerability. So since we're talking about democracy and elections, let's talk about Le Goblin Ver, the democratically elected president of Ukraine, Le Goblin Ver, loved by the people, Le Goblin Ver, our Churchill, who has to now give speeches behind bulletproof glass. Yep. Someone should call Alexander Stubb of Finland and show him the video of Zelensky having to give a speech behind bulletproof glass and ask Alexander Stubb, is that what victory looks like, Alexander Stubb? Is that victory? So yeah, Zelensky now is giving speeches behind bulletproof glass. Yeah, he fears the people. Le Goblin Ver. He fears the opposition forces that are circling around Kiev. He is very paranoid and very afraid. And we're seeing a big time government purge that is taking place right now in Ukraine. Not only is this about the prime minister or the defense minister, we're seeing all kinds of government officials being removed, even at the local level. We're talking mayors and governors and stuff like that. Those types of positions are even being purged. And Zelensky is giving his speeches behind bulletproof glass. Hey, Podolyak, the people love me. But I will stay behind this bulletproof glass just in case. That's a good idea, Mr. President. Right? So we have some news on the prime minister position. It is not going to 008 Keir Starmer. I was almost positive that Keir Starmer was going to become the next prime minister of Ukraine. It was a perfect fit. But instead, the prime minister, the new prime minister of Ukraine, will be going to the former CEO of Naftogaz. What's this guy's name? Sergei Koretsky. He is the new prime minister of Ukraine. And very interesting, Koretsky is very much, allegedly, the reports from Ukraine media are that he has big-time connections to Timur Mindich. Remember Mr. Mindich from Golden Toilet fame, the $100 million corruption scandal that involved energy, right? Yep. And Mindich fled to Israel. Mindich has been referred to by the Ukraine media as Zelensky's wallet. Good buddies, Mindich and Zelensky. And all of these guys, the new prime minister of Ukraine, Zelensky, Mindich, once upon a time, they were all connected to Kolomoisky. Remember that guy? Yep, they're all Kolomoisky's kids. And now this Naftogaz CEO or ex-CEO is going to be the prime minister of Ukraine. Allegedly, he's connected to Mindich. Mindich had a talent agency, Firepoint, which then decided to manufacture drones because it's a very natural transition from owning an entertainment company and talent agency to manufacturing drones. It's a very simple transition. And so now Firepoint is cashing in on the big drone and Flamingo missile business. And Mindich was involved in all of this. And there could be some connection with Le Gobelin Vert. I'm not saying there is, but there could be some connection with Le Gobelin Vert in all of this. And this Sergei Koretsky, he's part of this group, according to Ukraine media. Let's see, Ukraine's parliament on Thursday approved former Naftogaz CEO Koretsky as prime minister. Koretsky has been linked to disgraced businessman Timur Mindich, a close associate of Zelensky, who fled to Israel amid a major corruption scandal. Yeah, and Yermak, I almost forgot, Andrei Yermak is also part of this rat pack. Kolomoisky kids and all of these guys came up together. Yermak was fired, or he left, and then he said he's going to go to the front line. Remember that, where Yermak said, "I'm going to the front." That's right. And he never went to the front. He's still hanging around Kiev. The reports are that he's floating around Kiev, and he's still hanging out with Zelensky. He's not an official of the government, but he's still there in an unofficial capacity. So that's the new prime minister of Ukraine. Very interesting. And the parliament, they are now gone for the summer. So they're in recess for the summer, and they were unable to appoint a permanent defense minister to replace Fedorov, who was the drone whiz kid who has been fired. He resigned, but he was effectively fired. I talked about his situation in my video update yesterday. He's the guy that orchestrated the hype around drones, which became a very big business for the globalist cool kids. And he has been muscled out of his position as defense minister. And the Zelensky regime is now appointing an acting defense minister who happens to be the head of the intel agency, the SBU. I've heard he's a nasty guy, this SBU dude. And he has been tasked. This is crazy. Typical Ukraine, but it's crazy. He is now going after Fedorov. So the acting defense minister taking over for the fired, resigned defense minister is going after Fedorov, claiming that Fedorov was receiving money from a network of, take a wild guess, of fraudulent call centers and online casinos. Call centers. What happened with call centers last week? We had the assassination attempt of Yermolayev, the oligarch, who was running 150 scam call centers, and all of the oligarchs in Kiev and the people associated in and around the Zelensky regime allegedly were fighting to gain control of these call centers. And then you had the assassination attempt in Monaco of Yermolayev. And then the woman who allegedly placed the bomb outside of this this building in Monaco, she went back to Kiev. And the story says that allegedly the SBU knocked her off. I can't confirm any of this, but that's what the reports are claiming. And now you have the head of the SBU, who will be the acting prime minister of the acting defense minister of Ukraine, is now going to go after Fedorov, the ex-defense minister of Ukraine. So the acting defense minister is going to go after the former defense minister, and he's the SBU head as well, because of receiving money from call centers. Crazy, crazy stuff. And the rumor is that when the parliament returns from summer break, they're going to appoint a permanent defense minister. And this guy will be a police officer, like a police chief, who is very good at rounding up. Very good at rounding up people to send them to the front lines. Go ahead, eat it. It's good. Go ahead. There we go. Can't believe it. Very tasty. And she won't eat it. So yeah, the rumor is that this police chief will become the defense minister, because they need to get people to the front. Basically, this Fedorov, the drone genius, he was focusing so much on the drone narrative that they weren't able to get soldiers to the front lines. They didn't focus at all on the front lines. And the Russians easily advanced. They captured Kramatorsk. They're about to fully capture Liman. They're 6 kilometers away. Sorry, Konstantinovka. They captured Konstantinovka. They're going to now capture Liman. They're just clearing it up right now. And now they're 6 kilometers away from Kramatorsk, because Fedorov was focusing on the whole drone thing. And now everyone in Ukraine, the Ukraine military, and they're all in a panic now because they see their entire defensive belt collapsing. And so they're going to bring in this police chief after the summer, once they deal with Fedorov and they get the SBU to deal with all of this this mess. They're going to bring in this guy, and his purpose is going to be to just crack down on Ukrainians, men and women, to send them to the front. And you have the EU and their new legislation, which will prevent Ukrainian men and women from leaving. And that's going to be the game plan for Ukraine going forward. The whole drone wonder weapon thing, drones will still be launched into Russia to try and hit Moscow, to try and hit Crimea, to try and go after the oil refineries, and they'll hit the oil refineries, and they'll continue to do all of that stuff. But placing all the focus on the drones apparently was a huge strategic blunder, and now they are scrambling to get people to the front. And so that's why you see all of these moves, at least with the defense ministry. Look, for the globalist cool kids, the whole drone narrative served its purpose. Now they can push forward with the funding of drone facilities in Europe, not in Ukraine. they can start building these drone facilities, or say they're building these drone facilities, and they can start taking billions and billions of euros and pushing them towards these drone manufacturing facilities and to these military companies that will build these facilities. and the whole drone narrative is serving the purpose of the big wealth transfer that that is unfolding in Europe. So for in that instance, it's the whole drone narrative did its part, at least for the wallets of the globalist class. So they can move forward with the whole drone thing and funding the whole drone thing. But on the front lines in Ukraine, in Donbass, the drone strategy has been a freaking disaster. And that is why they are trying to get people in place who will effectively be able to send Ukrainian men and women to the front line in the belief that the more people they send to Kramatorsk, to Slavyansk, to Donbass, they will be able to slow down or even prevent the Russian military's advance. Not going to happen. Russia will capture these areas, and they will tear apart Ukraine, NATO's defensive belt that they spent 10 years building up. So that is an update there. The Australian put out an interesting article the other day with the title, "We Train Ukrainians to Be Better at Killing Russians. ADF Troops Warn of Key Shortages." You know, the Financial Times had a similar type of article where they claimed that the drones, Fedorov and the whole drone strategy was genius, but is coming from the Financial Times, but Ukraine is desperately short of soldiers. And now you have the Australian, a bit more arrogant, a bit more provocative than the Financial Times, to be quite honest, because they claim that they train Ukrainians to better kill Russians. That's the Australian. Russia's taking note of this article. It's all over the Russian media space. And they also admit that there is a shortage of Ukrainian soldiers. So the admission that Ukraine is in a very, very bad position, not enough soldiers on the front lines. But of course, they have to say that they're eliminating many, many Russians. And the Financial Times pretty much said the same thing. They were just talking about the drone success. They said the drones have been a success. Fedorov is a drone genius. But Ukraine is very short of soldiers. So we have news that Surovikin will return. General Armageddon, right? Surovikin? Remember him? There are rumors and reports that he is about to come back. And he is going to spearhead the operation to capture either Odessa or Kiev, or maybe both. If Surovikin does return, if he indeed is coming back and he is going to put together the operation and the plans to capture Odessa and or Kiev, all I can say is that the collective West, US and NATO and Ukraine are in big, big trouble. If Surovikin returns, then you know that the Kremlin means business. They're not effing around anymore. Because Surovikin is a freaking badass. The Surovikin line. The Surovikin line from 2023 that led to the defeat of the Ukraine military, commanded out of Germany by NATO generals. The 2023 super duper counteroffensive that offended me and offended you and offended everybody. The 2023 super duper counteroffensive that was going to split the land bridge towards Crimea, where the Ukraine military was going to march all the way towards Tokhmak and make it to the Sea of Azov. And this was going to cut off Crimea. It would lead to the collapse of Crimea, which eventually would lead to the collapse of the Putin government and to the defeat of Russia. And this was all put together out of Germany, out of Weisgarten or Weisbarten. Germany, the New York Times did a whole write-up on this. You guys remember the New York Times article that talked about the command and control center that runs the entire military operation out of Germany, with U.S. Military command and NATO military command, and they were commanding the entire 2023 super duper counteroffensive, and they were very confident that this would lead to the defeat of Russia, and the Ukraine military would break through. And the result was that they ran into the Sudoviken line. Sudoviken defeated NATO and Ukraine big time. It was a defeat like no other, like Trump would say. It was a defeat like no other, or a victory like no other, depending on which side you're looking at it from. An incredible victory for the Russian military, an incredible, humiliating defeat for NATO, the Ukraine military. They made it, I don't even think they made it 100 meters in, past the Sudoviken line. How far did they get? Let me know in the comments down below. How far did the Ukraine military get in the 2023 offensive? It was a disaster. It was a freaking disaster. Anyway, that was all Sudoviken, or most of it was Sudoviken's planning. So if he's back, then the collective West and NATO is in big, big trouble. Very big trouble. So we'll see if Sudoviken does make an appearance. Ursula made an appearance in Kiev yesterday. She received the Order of Europe Award, the first recipient of the Order of Europe Award. The Order of Europe Award was created on July 14th, 2026. And Ursula got the award on July 15th or 16th, whatever it was, 2026. A made-up award given to Van der Caesar. And the Russian military, they actually launched strikes in the outskirts of Kiev. They did not launch strikes in the center of Kiev. They hit military facilities on the outskirts of Kiev. But because Russia was launching strikes close to where the... or relatively close to where the Order of Europe Award ceremony was taking place, Ursula and her team, they were evacuated to a bunker. And Euronews actually put out a video of Ursula and her entourage moving to an underground bunker in Kiev. And this is significant. It's significant because in the past, over the past 4 years, you know, every other day you have these trains from Poland to Kiev, which bring in all kinds of collective West officials and cool kids. And not every other day. Let's say definitely once a week. Definitely once a week you have a train carrying some sort of collective West official to Kiev, from Poland to Kiev. And over the past 4 years, in general, the order from the Kremlin to the military was to not launch strikes when you have these Western officials in Kiev. That changed yesterday. That changed. You had the top official of the European Union, Van der Caesar, in Kiev getting an award. And this time around, the Russian military decided to launch strikes on the outskirts of Kiev. It happened, you had strikes into Kiev when you had officials a couple of times in the past it would occur. But this one's significant. It's Van der Caesar. You know, she's there in Kiev getting an award. And she had to be moved to a bunker. So definitely Russia sending a message. Even Zakharova said as much. She said in a statement from the foreign ministry, Maria Zakharova, that the vacation season in Kiev, she said, is over. The vacation season is over. Not a good idea for Westerners to go to Kiev anymore. That is the statement from Zakharova. So we have the conflict in Iran that continues to escalate. escalate in a big way. The U.S. military, they launched their, what is it, their seventh straight day or their eighth straight day of airstrikes into Iran, focusing on Hormuz. This is all about controlling Hormuz. Round one of the war was Operation Midnight Hammer to destroy the nuclear facilities. That was round one. Round two was all about regime change. You had the protests that then set up the military operation and the war to regime change Iran, the decapitation strikes. That was round two. Round three is all about Hormuz, trying to control Hormuz. That is what the Trump White House, that's what the United States is trying to do. They don't have much time because the strategic petroleum reserves and everything is being drawn down and the weapons are being drawn down. So the clock is ticking, but they are launching big time airstrikes. They're thinking about some sort of ground operation, not with the U.S. military, maybe ground operation from some other forces, maybe the Kurds, maybe, who knows, they're trying to figure it out. But the clock is ticking and they're trying to gain control of Hormuz. If they gain control of Hormuz, then the thinking is that they will have removed Iran's big leverage over the world, over the United States. And that will lead to the inevitable collapse and regime change in Iran. So that's what they're aiming for. And they're launching big airstrikes into Iran. And yesterday they started to target bridges. They hit three bridges and they also hit a railway link. There's a big escalation going after the bridges and the railway link. And it led to an Iran retaliation. So Iran started to hit once again at U.S. Air bases and U.S. facilities in the Gulf region, Bahrain, Kuwait. They're getting hammered by Iranian missiles and drones, and they're really running through their Patriot interceptors as well. I don't see Le Gobelin Vert getting any Patriot interceptors, at least from the United States. I just don't see it happening anytime in the short or medium term. Not going to happen. But they are using the interceptors in the Gulf to try and knock down Iranian drones and missiles. But the missiles are getting through, and they are doing damage, at least by going off of the videos and the images that we're getting on the interwebs. And the retaliation for hitting the three bridges from Iran was that they hit a bridge in Saudi Arabia. They targeted the King Fahd Causeway, connecting Bahrain to Saudi Arabia, with ambulances and fire trucks rushing to the bridge, per Mer News. So we've escalated to bridges. Yesterday I talked about or two days ago, I talked about how the U.S. military was going after water facilities, a very dangerous escalation because Iran could target desalination facilities in the Gulf, and that would be disastrous for residents of the Gulf region. So going after the water facilities is very, very dangerous, very risky. But they are going after the bridges now. And so bridges being hit in Iran is leading to Iran hitting bridges in the Gulf countries. And this time they were targeting Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is getting pulled into this war in a big way. So let's do a clown world, and we can wrap this video up. And I talked about the Order of Europe Award given to Van der Caesar and Keir Starmer. He was in Kiev, and he also received an award. His final trip as prime minister was to Ukraine to meet with Zelensky, to get one more whiff of Zelensky number 5. Let me get one more smell. Okay, Mr. Kier, one more smell just for you. And then he was given an award, actually a big award, a much bigger award than what van der Leyen got. The Order of Freedom Award, which is the biggest honor you can get for a non-Ukrainian. This is like the number one award that you can get from Le Gobelin Vert if you are not a Ukraine citizen, is the Order of Freedom Award. And it was presented 2008. Keir Starmer, he is racking up the awards. 2008 Keir Starmer, he got the Légion d'honneur from Macron the other day. Now he is getting the Order of Freedom Award from Le Gobelin Vert. He is racking up a ton of awards, Keir Starmer. No doubt about it. Keir Starmer is the GOAT. He is becoming a legend, Keir Starmer, with all the awards that he is getting. So yeah, Keir Starmer, the Order of Freedom Award. And Keir Starmer, the Order of Freedom Award is not free, by the way, because Keir Starmer, he pledged 300 million euros in fighter jets to Ukraine. It's a pledge. He didn't bring a suitcase this time around full of money, but we'll see. His final trip as prime minister goes to Ukraine, and he makes sure that he promises another 300 million to Le Gobelin Vert right before he exits. Unbelievable. Unfreaking believable. By the way, Andy Burnham, it is now official. He is the leader of the Labour Party. That is official today. And that means on Monday, this guy who was an unknown outside of the UK or outside of Manchester, he was pretty much an unknown, will now become the Prime Minister of the UK on Monday. Andy Burnham in a wrestling match. Yeah, 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 yeah. If you believe, they put a man on the moon, Andy Burnham. Andy Burnham is going to be the Prime Minister of the UK on Monday. Man on the moon, Andy Burnham. So that's all wrapped up as well. Starmer is gone, and replacing Starmer will be Starmer. Starmer number two, right? A worse version than Starmer. They even kind of look alike, don't they? Anyway, Starmer pledges 300 million to Le Gobelin Vert for fighter jets. He receives a big award, a big honor, and then he gives a big interview, Keir Starmer. And in the interview, I believe it was with, I want to say Sky News, but I'm not sure. Anyway, he gives this interview and he says that I go with pride. He is leaving the office of prime minister. I go with pride. I'm sure that he is going with pride. For this, there's no doubt about it, that Starmer leaves with pride. And then Starmer said, once again, he said, I leave the country better than when I found it. I leave the country better than when I found it. If you say it enough times, it will not make it true, Keir Starmer. Just because you say it over and over again, you're reading that script over and over again, does not make it true. So he said that as well. He said, I leave the country better than I found it in his speech to Parliament. Now he's repeating the same line in this interview. Once again, if you did such a good job, why are you being told to leave, right? If you've done such a great job, why are you leaving, bro? Basic logic. No reporter asks him this question. Of course not. They don't ask him this question. You don't want to trouble Keir Starmer, do you? He goes with pride, he says. Anyway, that's Keir Starmer. Another clown world, courtesy of Trump. His teleprompter operator is believed to have made more than $100,000 betting on Trump's speeches, sources say. Even the teleprompter guy is betting in the Trump White House. Even the freaking teleprompter guy. My God. My God. And then we have this news, Trump media to sell high-speed access to Trump's Truth Social posts so large trading firms can get posts milliseconds early, according to the Financial Times. It's about as close as you get to an admission that the Trump posts are all about manipulating the markets, right? We're going to launch strikes into Iran. Okay, that's his Truth Social post, depending on what you bet. Market's up, market down, you're going to make money. Trump announces that people in Iran are calling him and they want a deal. Depending on how you bet, you can make money. All prices up, all prices down, stock market up, stock market down. If you can get that Trump Truth Social post milliseconds before the other people can get it, you could probably make a whole lot more money. And that is, according to the Financial Times, what the Truth Media company is going to do. Unbelievable. Wow. Anyway, that is the video, everybody. The Duran.locals.com. We're on X. We're on Rumble. We are on Telegram. 26% off all merch on the Duran shop. It is hot. And there's an Armenian tavern right here. And did I say like this video, share this video, subscribe to this channel? Check to see that you're still subscribed to this channel, because YT is unsubscribing people. And obliterate that hype button. I will see everybody tomorrow. Take care.